Okay, everybody, thank you for coming, and we'll try to concentrate this. Anyways, as the title of the shiur was, you know, a psychological profile of Haman of Russia, the man's got problems. You know, there's it's quite obvious, you know, he's got everything going for him. One Jew doesn't bow for him, it drives him crazy. And for some reason, you know, he decides it's not enough to kill that one Jew. He has to exterminate the whole nation. You know, why is that? You know, but what's a little bit more, a lot more glaring is, you know, after he actually, his plot technically succeeded. He passed the bill, you know, to have the Jews exterminated, right? Then Esther does her three-day fast and calls him for the first, you know, drinking session. And on his way out, he sees, you know, Mordechai doesn't bow for him, and it drives him crazy. So you know the verses from the Megillah. So he comes home and he tells Zeresh and all the people that supposedly love him, you know, Ashro, Verov Bana, Vesha Shagidlo Amelech, how he's very rich, right? And he's got great kids in positions of power. And, you know, and the king holds him in the highest esteem. And he's the only one called, you know, to dine with the king and queen tomorrow night. But calls that a neno shaveli. It's all worthless to me when I see Mordechai sitting there. So you have to wonder why, you know, he basically said all the reasons why it shouldn't bother him. You know, he's got a lot of money, great kids, and a powerful position. But what's more, you know, amazing is, you know, what his wife says, right? You know, I mean, you guys know the drill. The hubby comes home and says there's a jerk in the office that, you know, really irks me. And I don't know what you do, but, you know, you ought to, like, say, you know, concentrate on what you have. You know, he's just jealous of you. But, you know, that's what Zeresh says. Zeresh says, you're right. It is totally legitimate that you should feel worthless, you know, despite all your wealth and despite the great kids, just because this guy doesn't get up for you. You're not going to be happy until he's dead. You know, like, that's her, you know, pep talk to her husband. You're not going to be happy until he's dead. So now another thing to wonder.
Do you know anything about her lineage? Is she also from?
Interesting. Who is that?
She also from.
And we assume that, as we're going to explain tonight, we're going to profile the Amaleki, you know, way of thinking,
right?
Right. So she doesn't give him any positive reinforcement, tell him to look at what he has. Right. She tells him, no, you're right, it's all worthless. It's legit that you should feel it's all worthless. You won't be happy until Mordechai is dead. So now she could have easily said, you know, just wait 11 months. You know, the edict had passed, right? And so, you know, Mordechai being a Jew, he's going to be killed out on Yud Gimel Adar with everyone else as it stands. And she said, no, we got to push it up. Like I said, he'll be dead in 11 months. No, this was a Nisan, this happened, right? So she said, no, yeah, he has to be dead as soon as possible. So, you know, so why? What was the urgency? But also this interesting thing, it was... they concocted a specific method, right? Yasu Eitz Gavua Chamishim Amo. You know, you can't just like have one of your bodyguards take out Mordechai, right? That to be this gallows. And it's 50 amos. 50 amos, according to Chazon, is 100 feet tall. Now that, there's something to that. And that becomes part of the V'nahafohu, that they wanted to accelerate the killing of Mordechai. And what it did was instead was accelerate the killing of Haman. Haman was killed on the 16th of Nisan. We in Chutz Lartz, it's by us, it's the second day of Pesach. So the theme of, you know, that Haman was hung on that day gets lost in the fact that, you know, you're prepping for a second, you know, you're recovering from a second Seder. Right, but you know, but it's brought down in halach. You're supposed to do a simcha, you know, on the first day of what would be Chol HaMoed in Eretz Yisrael, because today Haman was hung. Right? Yeah, where I was a scholar in residence last Pesach, I advised the kitchen to produce kosher Pesach Haman Tashin. Right, They didn't have it ready in time. They served it for Shvi Shel Pesach, right? You know, potato starch based, hamantashen.
It's just as good. It tastes just as good.
Anyway, so it goes hum was hum. So that's part of the vina fohu. But it's interesting. The tree makes a comeback, right? Because again, after the first day of war with the Jews, on the 13th of Adar. All right, so the king asks, what do you want? So he says, so she asked for two things. Then she asked for one more day for the Jews in Shushan, and she said, I want the corpses of the Bnei Haman also hung. There's something about that tree, right? So Haman's hung a tree, and then it's also, that's one of her special requests, give me Shushan Purim, and
that's
give
the
me also...
in the Torah of Haman.
That's right. We're going to deal with that, right? So there's something with the tree that has to be understood, right? But going back to the way Amalekim think, right? So Mordechai, Haman has to take Mordechai for the ride. And he felt very denigrated from the whole experience. So he comes home, wants some encouragement from his wife. There's not a single encouraging word. In Miseri Udim, Asher Mordechai, Asher Echosim, Ponav, Lo Tuchal Lo Kinofel Tiafrav. If Mordechai is really Jewish, if you started to fall, you're toast. So, you could imagine it's so that she emptied the bank account and skipped town, right? Obviously, it's like, where is a positive encouragement? Things could still turn around. There's no positivity in the Amaleki way of thinking. They're really the the glass is half empty type people, right? And now they're not just, it's not even half empty. Because it's half empty, you can never be happy, right? That's understand. Where that comes from, what's with the tree? so now there's regarding their. Their way of thinking, it started at the beginning, right? We're going to read on Shabbos Parsha Zachar, right? So on the pasuk Asher Karcha Baderech, Rash says they cooled you down. Right, that a mashal for Amalek is someone that jumps into a scalding hot tub, even though he got scalded, he cooled it down for everyone else. So also, even though Amalek got, he got severely beaten, in his, war against Klal Yisrael in the desert. But he had the effect of, that prior to Amalek coming, we say in Shira Sayam that we just read earlier in that parsha, Shamu Amim Yergozu, Chil Achas Yoshvei Plushes, Oz Nifal Alufei Adam. Everyone was scared of us. Everyone was scared of, the whole world was really scared of us. After Amalek, took the plunge, it was actually a suicide mission. It was worth it for him just to cool us down. And now not everyone's afraid of us anymore. Where is this coming from? That he's willing to do things even to his own detriment, anything to hurt the Jewish people. And this thing, crops up, and you're dealing with an Amaleki. Every time in Jewish history, you have this type of rabid anti-Semite that will do anything to take down Jewish people, even at their own expense. It was Hitler, he was already losing the war, and he was still valuable resources and trains that could be used. It was well known. And in this day and age, as we're going to explain, Amalek is a shapeshifter. He doesn't stay locked into, and we'll talk about that in just a minute, right? In this day and age, it's the suicide bombers, Islamic, anything, you'll sacrifice yourself to take that. Why? And that's different than, the average run-of-the-mill anti-Semitism, mm-hmm. where they're just stom jealous. They want our money, they want our country, or, they just want us stom out of their face. Because that's the anti-Semitism that they're willing to die you know, and do all types of harm to themselves and use their own kids as human shields, like the Palestinians do, just hurt the Jewish people. So you should know the radical Islam, that's today's Amalek, that type of sickness. You know, that's Amalek. You know, Amalek has moved from nation to nation, as evident from the story of Purim itself. You know, Haman was a Persian citizen. You know, he was a prime minister of the Persian. You know, he wasn't. Amalek as an independent nation had ceased to exist. You know, Shaul HaMelech had practically wiped them out, you know, and David finished the job, and then they were just these survivors infiltrating other nations. Right. And that's how it goes, Ad Hayom Hazeh. You know, we had Torquemada by the Spanish Inquisition, whether it's, you know, Hitler in Germany, and, you know, whether it's, you know, the leaders of the, you know, the radical Islam. You know, that's the way it's been ever since the days of Shaul HaMelech. They're infiltrators of other nations, and we'll discuss why this is. This all fits into, their perception of themselves, right? So, Rose correctly pointed out that there's a remez, you know, to Haman min haTorah minayin, ha min haEtz. Adam, did you eat from the tree? Right. So there's two things to discern right away. First of all, you know, that means they come from the Eitz Hadas Tovara, right? So now we learned in Derech Hashem, section 2, chapter 4, that if not for the sin of Adam, right, there will be only one type of nation on earth. You know, what we call Jewish today, that would be humanity in general, right? Right. The lower form of humanity, you know, for a better word, which is the 70 nations, that all came because of Chet Eitz Hadas Tovara. You know, so that's what it means. You know, we explained way back when then that what we say, you know, in our tefillahs everywhere, that Yisrael is goy echad ba'aretz. Right, what do you mean? There's plenty of nations. Oh, it means the one nation that there was always meant to be. There's only be'etzem one nation that was always intended. The rest are flukes, you know. And right, but that's true about all nations of the world, right? You know, all goyim, right? You know, and of which some of them could be saved, some of them could be chassidei umos olam. What sets Amalek apart is, you know, is also alluded to in that phrase, ha min ha'etz, did you eat from the tree? Well, why is God asking? God knows everything. No? The answer is that, the Mefarshim explained in simple pshat, you know, why is God asking? You know, because, you know, he wants to shove into Adam's face what he has become. Before the sin of Adam, there's no such thing as doubt.
Right.
Right. Suffolk. Right. Suffolk. Right, and that's the gematria of Amalek is Suffolk.
And that's interesting.
So, right?
Because nothing is clear anymore.
That's right. You know, Eitz Hadas Tovara gave rise to confusion.
So there's no transparency.
That's right. There's confusion. Right. So now confusion is like the essence of the problem, and then that essence, you know, as it were, spreads and infiltrates and creates a whole lower grade of humanity, that's less connected to the truth, less connected to Emes, right? But, but even within, you know, that framework of the humanity that emerged because of Chet Eitz Hadas, right, there are levels, right? There's the nation that could be, you know, connected, the actual point of origin of confusion. And then there are, you know, the other nations that follow, you know, but, you know, they, you know, their essence is not confusion. You know, their essence is that, they're influenced by confusion. But, you know, the bottom line is they just want to make it through the day. That's all they want. They just want to pay their bills and, you know, and of course, they're jealous of anyone that outdoes them, you know. So that's a Hamin Ha'etz, is that Haman is alluded to by the very essential problem created by the Eitz Hadas, whereas other goyim are branches of the problem. And since they're only branches of the problem, they could be elevated and saved. And then there's like Amalek that is connected the problem itself, the original problem, the original, you know, Shibush Hadas, the original confusion that detaches man from clarity, the clarity that the Torah gives. So the Amalek is connected, you know, that you know, original point of departure. The original point of departure is irredeemable. It's sheker, right? How that point of departure infiltrated and influenced other nations. We could save the other nations. It could become Hasidim Osalam. Amalek is, you know, Haminites. He's connected the Suffolk itself. He's connected the original, confusion and detachment, right? So now it's interesting. Bilam, when he sees Amalek, he says, Rashis Goyim Amalek, Vachriso Adeovet. He calls him the first amongst nations. Rashid Goyim Amalek, right? And so there's two things to immediately point out over here, right? That first of all, he's at, if the Eitz Hadas created a totem pole, you know, there's the original point of departure, and then there's how called the pyramid, how the pyramid spreads. Amok's at the Spitz, you know, where it all starts from. He's the Rashis, right? But also Rashis Mloshen Rosh, right? Leader and head space. Head, Rosh, Haminites, Suffolk, the original headspace. So now, that's why, you know, as the Ramchal points this out, when Amalek lost their nationhood, which started already from the original war, they were once a whole nation with special bad qualities, and then they lost their nationhood, because it says, Vayachlos Yoshua, by the very first war, Vayachlos Yoshua es Amalek, ve'et Amo. He weakened Amalek and his nation, Lefi Chorev. Right? So the Ramchal writes that, you know, in the Nanan, the Derech Shem, but rather in the Sefer called Kines Hashem Tzvachos, that, you know, they began to lose their status as an independent nation, you know, a separate nation onto its own from already the first war, you know, the Ves Amo, their nationhood. Right? And then Shaul came and finished the job. All that was left was Agag. Haman was Ha-Agagi, the surviving descendant of Agag. You know, Shaul finished the job, took away their nationhood. They lost their Am, but they didn't lose their Rashis. And that's why, says the Ramchal, is the secret that the Torah has an interesting term in our obligation to kill Amalek. Timche es Zecher Amalek. The thought of Amalek. Right, there, you know, the memory of Amalek, thought of Amalek. It doesn't, by the Shivas Amamin, the seven nations, also read, just says Hachrim Tachrim, wipe them out. You know, that's all it says. Amalek is also in front of Kimocho Emcha Zecher Amalek. Oh, we're going to read it. That's in Parshas Pesach. We're going to read in Parshas Timche Zecher Amalek. It's Zecher Amalek. What is Zecher Amalek? Amalek, Timche Amalek. No, they stopped being a nation and they were whittled down to the point of their essence of being an idea. And that's why we said, you talk about these rabid anti-Semites that are willing to, do anything to hurt the Jewish people. These people are ideologues that incite a whole nation, you know, like prime example was Hitler, right? Now it's these imams that, that incite the terrorists. That's the clip of Amalek. It's like Haman also. Three words to Achashverosh, and he got him to agree to annihilate all the Jews. They are Zecher Amalek. They're racist goyim. That's their unique evil power, right? That they could, you know, that even if they don't have a nation of their own, they could be the leaders and the ideologues of any nation. Mm-hmm. And the nature of their existence is Zecher Amalek. Now, they lost their independent nationhood, but there's Zecher Amalek, the concept of Amalek, floating around like a virus, not corona, right? You know, right? Just coming and, you know, infiltrating and infecting a nation, right? And that's, that makes them only more deadly. That's why Amalek is a shapeshifter. If there was a classical Amalek nation that was on its way out already from the first war and was totally done, you know, with Shaul, right? But ever since then, it's the Zecher Amalek that just goes from nation to nation. It infects this nation. And they're in that capacity of Rashis Goyim. They're on the top of the totem pole of the Eitz Hadas that branched out into the 70 nations. They're at the Spitz, at the top, the Rashis, and that's where they could infect any nation, right? But here's the thing, right? Being at the top of being at the racist, at the point of origin, right? They also know that they're not real. That's the problem. you know, that's the problem they suffer from. No one, you know, no one is more real with the idea that they're not real than Amalek. He knows who he is. All right, so now the term racist should immediately pull up a word association. Who else is called racist? The Jewish people. Baracious, b'shul yisosh nikru racious, b'shul atosh nikru racious. Now, we're taught in geometry there's room for infinite points on a plane, but there's only one center. There's no two centers, there's no two firsts. They have infinite in a series, right? But there's only one first, you know, first being a synonym for center. What spatially is a center, you know, in a series is the first. There are no two of them. So who's the racious, us or Amalek? Well, truth is like this. From God's perspective, you know, and the world as it was meant to be, you know, Yisrael is the racious. Baracious, b'shul yisosh nikru racious. But then in the pseudo world created by the Eitz Hadaas, Amalek is the racious. Right? Amalek is the racious. Right? But, you know, you know, but, you know, which one is the real racious? That's why there's something that, you know, they are driven insane by the Jewish people, because we are fighting for the exact same spot in reality.
I thought that the ideology of Amalek is that, not that God created the world, but that he has no further involvement in it. Like, he's not involved in the... what happens in the world, the running of the world, whereas the Jewish people believe exactly the opposite, that God is involved with them, and God's taking history to a certain point.
Right.
Whereas Amalek is, you know, everything's happenstance, whatever happens, happens.
Yes.
So, you know, God's not guiding.
Yeah, but you know, it's a little bit more complex than it, because they play, like any good politician, they play both sides of the argument. Leave it out. Either there is no divine providence,
right,
or alternately, God has an agenda. If he has an agenda, so whatever's going to happen is going to happen anyway, because he has an agenda that has to be fulfilled. So why should I bother trying?
Excuse me, many Jews say the same thing. They also say, well, that was supposed to happen, it's supposed to happen anyway, so, you know, doesn't matter if I did this or if I did that.
Yeah, okay, that's not a good thing. I can't endorse that. Amalek pays, you know, that he's Suffolk, but he stacks things up, so you're perpetually confused, because he plays both sides of the argument. Because if there is Hashgacha, then it's pointless to try. God's going to do his thing anyway.
Right.
Or there's no Hashgacha, one or the other, right? So, and either way, it comes up the same, but you might as well do whatever you please. Either way.
You know what? Everybody has a different reason why there's anti-Semitism.
Right.
Either too rich, but the Polish Jews were too poor, and Hitler said that they are sloppy and dirty and lazy. And then the other side said we're rich and we're famous. No matter what it is, there's always anti-Semitism.
Right.
So what I would like you, if you could do it, and everybody's tried and nobody can, what is the igor? What is the Kabbalistic ichor of why the Goyim hate us? Where is the nucleus?
Right.
Everything they say, there's always the opposite.
Right.
You're either too rich or too smart. You're either poor or too dumb. No matter what you say,
right. There's
no ichor. Where is the ichor?
Right. So the ichor is, you know, generally speaking, is that we're a threat to their way of life. Because we're from the Eitz Chaim, they're from the Eitz Hadas. And the whole mentality and world order came from the Eitz Hadas. And that's why there's not one single cause for anti-Semitism. All the reasons for anti-Semitism are all excuses.
Right.
As my Rebbe Moshe Shapiro told us, you know, Jews just make Goyim feel uncomfortable. And then they just, you know, reverse engineer and try. You don't want to say that it makes sense of others. You make sound irrational. Right. So you hang it on a reason. Right? Because we make them feel very uncomfortable. And why do we make them feel uncomfortable? Because we are a threat to their way of life, because we are from the Eitz Chaim, and they're from the Eitz Hadas. Right? Except that Amalek is uniquely positioned at the top and the point of origin of that departure. The other nations are just branches, and that's why we could rip those branches off Amalek's tree and graft them onto our tree, either as Geirei Tzedek or as Chassidim Masom, and it's all in the same chapter in the Darshan that we learned together, section 2, chapter 4. But Amalek is connected the original point of departure, which is all in the mind. So when we took away his nationhood, he was whittled down to Zecher Amalek, to the point of Rashis Goyim, right? You know, the concept. And it's a concept that can infect the Rosh, the head of any nation.
Yeah, but they hate even the irreligious Jews. They don't just hate the religious Jews. They hate the irreligious Jews. That's, they hate Jews not, that don't even know that they're Jewish.
Because the even the irreligious Jews are carriers of the message of the Torah. So even if they don't observe the Torah, like we must have said this once, you know, being the chosen people means one of two things. Either we do our job, and that's how we're Mekadesh Shem Shamayim, or we don't do our job, and God uses us as the soccer ball that he kicks around to score goals against the Goyim, right? So we're either, you know, God, you know, does the, he wins the competition with us, either because we do good, right, and we light up the world, or he'll use us as the ball, right? So the non-from Jews, they're still God's ball, right? Right. So even if they're not observing the Torah, they're part of the Torah agenda. Now that's the privilege of being a member of the Jewish people, right? You know, you are chosen as the vehicle, whether it's by what you do or how you will be used, right? All right. So now here's the thing. So Amalek, there's no one that really is, because of their unique high position on the top of the Eitz Hadas totem pole. On the other hand, they are so real with how they're not real. And the whole thing, because one man ate a piece of fruit he shouldn't have, that's their whole, right? Mm-hmm. And they understand that it's the whole, they're there to create confusion, right? And their place on the global map is, you know, they want the same place that the Jewish people take. We're supposed to be Or L'Goyim. We're supposed to be the first that the whole Bria follows. And that's what will be at the end of time. Azekro, Kolim, Kulam, Likro, B'Shem, Hashem, Ulav, Doshchem, Echad. The Navi Tzifanya says, I'll call to all nations. And they all serve Hashem in unison, the Jewish people leading, right? they want our job. They want our position. That's an amazing thing. It's alluded to in what we're going to read in Parsha Zohar. Vaya baniach Hashem olkecha mikol vecha misaviv. When Hashem will give you peace from all your nations around you. Timche zecher Amalek. Wait a minute. I just said, all nations around me, I have peace from all my enemies around me. It means Amalek is not included in all the nations around you. Right? He's not in that cloud. Right, all the nations around us are branches of the Eitz Hadas. We could rip those branches off the Eitz Hadas and graft it onto our tree. They're around us. Amalek is not around us. Amalek wants our place in reality. It's the real Rashis versus the fake Rashis. So he's not misaviv. He wants to be on our place on the checkerboard of reality. He wants the same place as us. Mm-hmm. He's not oivecha misavi. He's not around. He's not from the infinite points on the plane. He wants point center where we are. He's not misaviv. He wants where we are standing. All right? So that's an amazing thing. He's struggling to make himself real. Mm-hmm. And which is interesting. It's a parallel struggle to what we're doing. Right? We learned the Derech Shem, we want to do our mitzvahs to earn our immortality and our Olam Haba. Amalek is struggling for something very similar. He's not thinking Olam Haba. He doesn't think long term, but he's trying to make himself as real as possible in Olam Hazeh, right? And he could only exist in the vacuum of where the Jewish people aren't. And that's why he is so hung up with the extermination of the Jewish people, right? Because if he would be real, that would be the position he would have.
It's either them or us.
It's either them or us. And that's why it's worth it to have, to send suicide bombers. It's worth it, right? Because in taking down the Jewish people is as real as you're going to be.
Because when we're down, they're up, and vice
right?
versa.
That's right. It's a seesaw. It's a seesaw. There's no coexistence. Our down is their up. Our down is their up. Right, there's no way of coexistence, right? And they know it, that they're at the top of the point, they are at the original point of departure, the original suffix, the original pagam of Eitz Hadas, whereas the other nations are just branches of that, so we could fix them. They are the point of departure itself, ha min ha Eitz, right? So so now you can understand that, you know, that they are obsessed with taking down the Jewish people because they're seeking to make themselves real. Right, so it's worth blowing up some of your people, you know, because, you know, they exist in the vacuum of where the Jewish people and the Torah isn't. You take out the Bishul Yisoshnik Horatius, Bishul Atoshnik Horatius, if you put a vacuum there, that's where they could exist. Right, and that's why when confronted with the Jewish people, you know, Mordechai, it may have been one Jew who didn't bow to Haman, but he reminded Haman of the bigger cosmic problem. You know, he was wondering, why does one guy not bowing down to me bother me so much? And Ki Gidlos Am Mordechai, it was on his mind. You know, he wanted to understand himself why it bothers so much, because that guy's a Jew. And so he said, killing just one Jew is not going to solve the problem. You know, this one's particularly stubborn, right? I got to take out all of them if I'm going to ever feel that I'm real and not just a walking lie. An illusion, a zecher, you know. Right, so, you know, so you can well understand, therefore, why he has to take out the entirety of the Jewish people. All right, so then, that's when Mordechai doesn't bow to him at the beginning of the story, right? Then there's how Mordechai doesn't bow to him, you know, when seemingly he succeeded. He passed the bill to exterminate the Jewish people, all right? It still bothers him. But wait a minute, I beat him already. It's just a matter of time. It still bothers him. So it means that maybe my plan is not foolproof. Because if it were foolproof, it shouldn't bother me so much. Right? And he goes in and he checks with his wife. And his wife, being an Amalek, he says, you can't be happy. Right? Or in another way of saying is, you can't be sure that your plan that's 11 months away is really going to succeed. Because if it still bothers you so much, you know, the Jews are real. We're not real. So something will happen between now and then that the plan will be reversed. So it wasn't just, you know, to alleviate the pain immediately. They threw down another challenge. They upped the ante, right? That was the Eitz. So it wasn't just about, you know, getting rid of, you know, Mordechai right now. Because it's true, you can't be happy with whatever you have if Mordechai is walking around the earth, because it reminds you that all that you have is just an illusion. All right. So what's it? Yasu Eitz Gavoh Chamishim Amma. So there was two things being alluded to, and that, first of all, that Eitz represents the Eitz Hadas. You know, the Eitz Hadas affected the entirety of reality, and we know that reality, for whatever reason, we're not going to get into the Kabbalah, but I'm sure everyone's heard that there are Chamishim Sha'arei Bina. Reality, the cosmic forces that make up reality are Chamishim Sha'arei Bina. Right? Right? So Yasu Eitz Gavoh Chamishim Amma. There's a statement, the Eitz Hadas reigns, right? Not the Eitz Chaim. Right? And Mordechai will be hung on it. But there's another pshat in the Medrash that, you know, so it's like, so one pshat is that it represents the Eitz Hadas, to show the Eitz Hadas, the Hamina Eitz, reigns supreme, right? So it'll be a litmus test. If Mordechai gets hung on the tree, that means the Eitz Hadas has won, beat the Eitz Chaim, right? But there's another pshat, which actually is another hesber for where Goyim get their confidence from in their anti-Semitism. There's a medrash that says that, where are you going to find a piece of lumber that big? Mm-hmm. 100 feet. The Teva. It took a plank from Tevas Noach, right? Right. There's a famous piece of Purim Torah that based on this medrash. There's an interesting verb, you know, like Purim, v'noach ba'arba'asar, v'noach b'chamishar, and they rested. V'noach, right? So it's a famous Purim Torah. Yeah, it sounds better when you're drunk. How did Noach? You know, yeah, it's a question you have to pose when a person's like, you know. How did Noach make it into the story of, so because Haman took a plank from the Teva. Noach didn't want to give it to him. So they had a tug of war. Haman won, and push Lep Noach into the Megillah. It's much better when you've had a lot. But it's true, there is a medrash like that, that the that piece of wood, that Eitz Gavoach HaMishavam was a plank from the Teva, right? There was an amazing statement being made, you know, and it's another thing to bear in mind, right, of where the anti-Semites get their confidence from. Noach technically wasn't Jewish.
Right.
No. You know, the goyim, the good goyim are called Bnei Noach. The bad ones are called Akum, right? And the good ones are called Bnei Noach, the ones that kept their seven Noahide laws, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a bris with Noach never to destroy the world again. Mm-hmm. That means, hey, being a goy is A-okay. Mm-hmm. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a bris, the keshes, never to destroy the world. And he made it when there was no Jews yet, right? All right, so hey, so what's so why are we second rate? We're the ones who got the bris,
right,
that Hashem will never destroy the world. So to be a goy, which all comes from Yetzer Hara, is A-okay, right? And goyim feel that confidence, you know, and that, you know, that they have the power of the rainbow behind them, right? And that, so therefore that was also the statement, if we kill the Jews, the world will still be standing because there was a bris made with Noah, who wasn't Jewish at all.
Right.
Right? Okay. And so to be a Ben Noah is good enough. Right? So that was a statement being made. You hung him on a plank from Tevas Noah. But here's what Haman didn't realize, that famous Gemara in Chulin, let's say Haman Minah Torah Minah Minah Eitz, first starts off Moshe Min han Torah minayin, right? Lo yadun uchi bottom la'olam b'shagam u'basar. I'm not going to contend with man forever, for he b'shagam, for he is flesh. B'shagam is gematria Moshe. The gzera of the mabul. This is the pasuk at the end of Parshas Bereishis, which says, "I've had it with people. In 120 years, I'm bringing the mabul." Right? There's a remez to Moshe there. That's the remez to Moshe. Right? Which means that, you know, by the mabul, HaKadosh Baruch Hu already envisioned Moshe. That means that, you know, this mabul thing, that not, you know, Noach will survive. But Noach didn't survive Alts Noach as an Iker in his own right. It was Al Minas to come to Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's why it's really called, until Moshe Rabbeinu came on the scene, it's really called that the mabul never really stopped. Because the real thing that the Rebbe Baruch Hu wanted to save from the mabul was Moshe. You know, the Torah, you know, the Torah. And that's the secret, that Moshe was also in a teva.
That's right.
The mabul was still happening. And how did Yetzias Yisrael end? Mitzrim were drowned. Right? And that's when all the nations were afraid of us. Right? Because it became clear that they, you know, the flood never really stopped you never really passed the flood until the emergence of Am Yisrael. You know, the nation under the leadership of Moshe, the nation of the Torah. Right, and that was the mistake Haman made, you know, mistake the anti-Semites make, that the whole tachlis of Noach being spared was for Moshe. All right, so that was the challenge that they were throwing down. You know, let's get the etz, the etz, connected the etz adas, connected the bris with Noach, like either pshat, right, and we're going to hang Mordechai on it, and then you could be certain. If we hang Mordechai in it, that would be a litmus test that we're on top. And sure enough, the extermination plan will go through and will not be disrupted. It'll make it, right? You know, with all that, you know, they saw that the plan failed because Mordechai is now in Achashverosh's good graces. Haman comes back, you know, from the ride. And what does Zeresh say? You know, in Mizeru Din Mordechai, if he's really Jewish, Ashechilsi in Polifanov, lo tuchalo. So what does Rashi? Rashi in the Megillah brings the Chazal. That he says, this nation, Aumazu Nimshal Afar, Vimshal Kochavim, were compared to the dust. Vazarcha Ka'afarats, we're also called compared to the stars. No, you know, Kechokhve Ashemaim Lorov. Says, Kishi Yordim, Yordim Lafar. It's true. When they're down, you can push them down up to the earth. Avo kisha olim, olim ad larakia. But when they're up, they go all the way up. It's a seesaw.
Mm-hmm.
And Mordechai is on his way up. It's over. It's over. So sure enough, she emptied the bank account and skipped town. You know, he would have done the same thing, except that what happened was, it says, well, immediately after she tells him that, they came to, Vayavhilu Lavias Haman, they just, they didn't let him chance, they didn't give him a chance to, you know, bathe and change. They, you know, okay? All right. So that's the point we make. That the Amalekim, as talented as they are, because they're very good at mind games, Zecher Amalek, invading the mind, incitement, right? Invading the mind, incitement, creating doubt, you know, creating detachment. But on the other hand, they also know who they are, right? Because coming from the original point of departure from Emes, so they know who they are. They are the original point of departure, and that's why they cannot bear the Jewish people, and they'll do anything to rid the world of Jewish people, because their only chance at being real in some way is only in the gap left from the Jewish people, and that's why, you know, an Amaleki cannot have a positive self-image. He knows he's not real, and the only sense of reality he had is if he could knock the Jews down, and that would create the vacuum that they could infect. I think we answered all the questions, right? Okay, thank you very much for coming.